In a third-grade classroom in Mogadishu, a tiny girl watched a bully humiliate a smaller, poorer orphan. What happened next wasn't typical childhood drama. It was the first chapter of a story that would eventually reach the halls of Congress. Despite her size, she challenged the bully to meet after school, pulled him down, and rubbed his face in the sand. This wasn't just playground justice. It was the beginning of Ilhan Omar's lifelong pattern, seeing injustice and refusing to look away. Growing up in her mother's family compound, unusual in patrilineal Somalia, she learned that everyone's voice mattered, even the youngest. Her grandfather Baba raised her mother as an equal to her brothers, creating a foundation for Omar's later advocacy. She climbed trees, played soccer, and never quite fit conventional expectations. Within her family's walls, these differences weren't deficiencies, but strengths. That fierce little girl who defended the vulnerable would carry the same spirit into congressional hearings decades later, proving that sometimes the most powerful political movements begin with a single act of courage in a schoolyard. Somalia's civil war erupted in 1991 with terrifying speed. Schools, mosques, and markets closed. Omar's house, positioned between a major thoroughfare and military headquarters, became a target as mortars flew overhead. Across the country, 350,000 Somalis died of starvation and disease. Most devastating was how conflict transformed neighbors into potential threats. After militia members questioned her clan lineage at a checkpoint, Omar was never allowed outside again. When the mouth of the shark is safer than home, this Somali saying captures the desperate calculus driving their escape. Packed with 30 neighbors in scorching cattle trucks, they endured repeated gunfire. While sleeping on a beach, rumors circulated that her father and siblings had been murdered. As a child, Omar mentally prepared for life as an orphan, a stark reflection of how quickly children in conflict zones must confront adult realities. Miraculously, she found her father alive at dawn. After facing bullets and persistent hunger in Kismayo, they were smuggled into Kenya on small planes. The Utonge refugee camp near Mombasa brought no relief, just red dust and endless tents. The refugee camp proved deadlier than war itself. Omar witnessed parents starving to feed their children, playmates becoming orphans overnight, and her beloved Aunt Foss succumbing to malaria. Her father's somber words, that there's no escape from destiny, taught her a harsh truth. Most refugees never escape, not from lack of merit, but from circumstances beyond control. Yet resilience flourished. When six siblings lost both parents within 2 weeks, the community rallied. Years later, one sibling reached out after Omar's congressional win. Baby Umi, whom she'd assumed dead, was thriving. Such moments revealed how bonds forged in crisis endure for decades. Through fires that destroyed camp sections and relentless hardship, Omar absorbed the lesson that would define her. Today doesn't determine tomorrow. This conviction later sustained her through political battles, rooted in one certainty. If she survived the camp, she could survive anything. Omar's grandfather championed resettlement in America. Only in America can you ultimately become an American. Everywhere else, we will always feel like a guest. UN videos showed idyllic scenes, amber waves of grain, white picket fences, abundant meals. Landing in New York, trash-lined streets and homeless people shattered these visions. Young Ilhan told her father, "This isn't America." His weary reply, "This isn't our America. We'll get to our America," captured the chasm between immigrant expectations and reality. In Arlington, Omar struggled through middle school knowing only hello and shut up. Placed in sixth grade after a four-year education gap, she faced constant cultural confusion. She'd strike first when students stared, misinterpreting curiosity as threats, a survival strategy, not aggression. After eighth grade, her father moved them to Minnesota, home to America's largest Somali population. At Edison High School, she found dozens of Somali students, overwhelming belonging after years of isolation. Her Arlington detention hours spent studying earned her placement in advanced classes. Rather than joining Edison's racial tensions, Omar joined Unity in Diversity, a student coalition creating leadership programs that brought peace to their school. Though marriage seemed bizarre to Omar, a social construct based on respectability rather than devotion, she and Omar married before she turned 19. Her father wanted her to finish college first, but preferred she have a legitimate reason to spend time with a man. With good grades and extra credits, Omar enrolled in a 2-year accounting program. Shortly after starting school, the September 11 attacks forced evacuation of the mall. Beyond the shock all Americans felt, Muslim Americans like Omar faced additional fear, as their religion was suddenly deemed dangerous. A year after her wedding, Omar delivered her daughter, Isra, during a blizzard. During this period, the U.S. invaded Iraq, a war Omar believed was illegal, knowing from childhood experience it would rob Iraqis of normalcy for decades. When Omar discovered she was pregnant with twins while weighing only 89 pounds and anemic, she felt overwhelmed. At 13 weeks, she miscarried, trauma worsened by her inability to prioritize self-care. During her third pregnancy in 2005, she traveled to Sweden to stay with her mother's religious cousins, finding therapeutic peace in their quiet, pious home. After Adnan's birth, she embraced wearing the hijab as a personal choice. As Barack Obama campaigned on hope and change in 2008, Omar found herself trapped in hopelessness. With 2 children under 5, physical symptoms manifested as severe headaches, insomnia, and emotional instability. She was finally confronting all her unprocessed losses: her mother's death, the war, her homeland, her language, her promised future. In summer 2008, Omar and Ahmad divorced quietly. Her breakdown culminated in an impulsive second marriage and shaving her head under her hijab. Seeking a fresh start, she applied to North Dakota State University and, without telling anyone, packed up her children and left for Fargo. Omar's life in Fargo followed a strict routine, waking at 4 a.m. to study before preparing her children for the day. Away from family judgments, she explored new ideas freely, joining campus organizations and organizing Muslims in Hijab Day. Her nutrition work with Simply Good Eating, teaching immigrant communities about healthy eating, revealed how politics affected real lives. While she taught them not to refrigerate potatoes, they struggled with employment and driver's licenses. After working in a Kenyan refugee camp, Omar returned profoundly grateful. One woman's story transformed her. Jija had lost 5 children and her husband during their journey, her 3 youngest surviving only by drinking cooled urine. This reframed Omar's anger about her family's separation into understanding their singular focus on survival. Returning to Minneapolis, she reconciled with family and repaired her marriage with Ahmed. Their 3rd child, Ilwad, meaning to see beauty in Somali, brought unexpected joy. Omar threw herself into political organizing, helping defeat both Republican ballot measures in 2012. Minnesota became the first state to defeat a constitutional marriage amendment, paving the way for nationwide marriage equality. In 2014, Omar became senior policy aide to newly elected councilmember Andrew Johnson after managing his underdog campaign. At City Hall, they successfully removed outdated ordinances, including the spitting and lurking prohibition, disproportionately targeting young men of color. Her belief that if you aren't making someone uncomfortable, you aren't doing your job, led to a physical attack where someone pulled her hijab, causing a concussion. She documented the injury and refused silence. When she launched her campaign for state representative in October 2015, Somali elders summoned her father, demanding she withdraw for a male candidate. He defended her fiercely. Despite vicious smear campaigns and conspiracy theories about her marriages, a last attempt by those who couldn't accept her refusal to kiss the ring, she won her primary on August 9, 2016. Trump's election devastated her, especially after he singled out Somali immigrants at a Minnesota rally. In summer 2018, when Keith Ellison left his congressional seat, she filed to run with just 30 hours before the deadline. She won her primary by over 20,000 votes and authored an amendment overturning the 181-year ban on headwear, allowing her hijab on the House floor when sworn in on January 3, 2019. Her father calls her Iron Lady, though her strength comes from moral outrage, not fearlessness. Her victory was for every marginalized person told their dreams have limits. Her mission is amplifying voices of those who think they're voiceless. That's the American dream to her. When they first arrived and her father said, "This isn't our America," she thought they'd reached the wrong place. She's still searching for that idealized America from orientation videos, the one with turkey dinners, welcoming schools, safe neighborhoods. Most refugees never experience that America, yet the constant aspiration fuels immigrants' hustle. Omar worries Americans have become complacent, normalizing inequalities while avoiding discussions about systemic biases. The America we deserve isn't a myth. It's achievable through community organizing and collective advocacy. Democracy is like a baby learning to walk. Progress takes time. As a refugee who's seen civilization collapse, Omar recognizes how systems erode when people stop paying attention. The world belongs to those who show up, speak up, and refuse to be silent.